Okay, good morning again, church. Turn with me to Matthew chapter 20, Matthew 20 today. And before I jump into my sermon, I wanted to give you a little update on what's going on with our work with our Northwest Community Center in Vickery with refugees and really the great response we've had as we have been preparing to serve God by serving Afghan refugees. And I'll just thank the 145 Northwest families who have expressed interest. We were on a Zoom call recently, my wife and I, and there was 100 Northwest folks there on that Zoom training, and hundreds of household goods have been donated to help set up apartments. And Jeff, our director over there, was telling me about, man, we've had such a great outpouring. We're figuring out where to store it till we get to take it to folks. And I wanted to make sure you knew that this week you could help just after school and women's conversation clubs. We need volunteers for that, and it's actually a great opportunity to have conversations about Jesus. And you can learn more just going to our website and checking out the link here on our screen. So thank y'all for being a part of this. As I've said before, who knows if God has not raised us up for such a time as this, okay? So we're going into Matthew chapter 20 today, and I want to ask a question to start. How many here know the name Daryl Johnston? If you know that name, raise your hand high and hold it up. And there's actually a lot of people here who don't know that name, so I'm going to ask another one. How many know the name Emmett Smith? Okay, now look around. Hold your hand up, because everybody knows the name Emmett Smith. Probably a lot of people here even know the number that he wore. What was Emmett Smith's number? 22, that's right, inducted into the Football Hall of Fame in 2010. Now, for those of you who didn't know Daryl Johnston's name, he was the blocking fullback for Emmett Smith. His nickname was the... Some of you knew, all right. I hope Daryl Johnston watches this sermon to encourage him now. I hope he didn't turn it off after the first question. The Moose played 149 consecutive games, and he rarely ran the football. In fact, he had more receptions in his career than carries. He averaged a whopping 1.5 carries a game over the course of his career. Because you see, in the heat of the weekly battle, he was shouldering the load. He was busy blocking for Emmett Smith. And all that blocking got him a neck injury that ended his career. And when Emmett Smith became the NFL all-time leading rusher, the Moose was no longer playing. But when Emmett was leaving the game that day, they saw each other in the hallway. And Emmett looked at him and said, "I could not have done it without you." Isn't that awesome? But what's even better is Johnston's reply. "It was my pleasure. I couldn't imagine doing it for anybody else." It was Johnston's pleasure to serve as blocking fullback for Emmett. It was Johnston's pleasure to serve on America's team, okay? Johnston loved his job. He loved the people he played with. He loved the Dallas Cowboys. He took pleasure in serving. He served on a great football team, and he has 3 Super Bowl rings to show it. And day in and day out, I am sure that Daryl Johnston had to deal with his own heart, that he had to answer some questions like this: will I serve however the team calls me to serve? 1.5 carries a game. And will I serve no matter how much applause I receive? Because you know Emmett Smith was getting all the applause. Now, Matthew chapter 20 today, we're going to talk about a landowner. Jesus tells a parable. And the landowner is God himself. And we're going to talk about some laborers who are called to serve. And I want to remind you that when you read this, we're going through the whole book of Matthew. You're reading it in a context. And Jesus, in this time in his journey, he's actually focusing on the disciples. And he's got a word for them because he is preparing them to loyally serve him on the greatest team in the world. And some of you say, what's the greatest team in the world? I want you to know, I believe, according to this Bible, the greatest team in the world is the church. The big C church and the small C local church. And I just want to add this little thing to my sermon this morning because I understand that the church in these days and times has gotten a lot of bad press. And there's been some times where we've done some things that haven't helped our press. But let me remind all of us who are sitting in here this morning and all of us online that this Bible says this, that Jesus shed his blood not just for you as an individual, but for the church. That this Bible tells us that the church is the visible bodily representation of Jesus on the earth today. And if you don't believe it is the greatest team on earth, you just need to read some history to understand why we have the number of hospitals we have in the world today, the number of schools we have in the world today. It is because the church made up of a bunch of loyal followers of Jesus, and I could go on and on, but that's just extra. That's not the sermon today, okay? But Jesus, last week we saw this, and he says it again, this very difficult thing about serving in his body, the church. And he says this, the first will be last, and the last will be first. Hey, I want you to say that with me. The first will be last, and the last will be first. And it's why I say that the disciples, the early church that would have received this text, and us here today have to answer two questions. Will I serve however God calls me to serve? Will I serve however God calls me to serve? And will I serve God no matter what applause I receive from others? Let's look at the text. Verse 1, Jesus, speaking to the disciples, says, the kingdom of heaven, it's like a landowner who went out early in the morning, 6 a.m., to hire laborers for his vineyard. And when he agreed with the laborers for a denarius for the day, he sent them into the vineyard. So here's the idea. Some guys show up, and the landowner says, okay, let's work this out together. You're going to get a denarius. You start working right now. It's the only group that you get this sense that they agree together, okay, we're going to do this. And then some others come, right? Some come at 9, some come at noon, some come at 3 p.m., some come at 5 p.m. And it says in verse 4, to those others who came later, he said, you also go into the vineyard, and whatever is right, I will give it to you. Whatever is right, I will give it to you. Trust me that I will do what I say I will do. You got to trust me to be generous. You got to trust me to reward you. And I want to ask us this morning, can you do that with God? We go on, verse 8. The day passes. And when evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, call the laborers and pay them their wages, beginning with what? The last group to the first. So I want you to imagine the scene here. All the 6 a.m. guys are lined up. All the 9 a.m. guys are lined up. All the noon guys are lined up. All the 3 p.m. guys are lined up. All the 5 p.m. guys are lined up. The foreman comes. He's going to pay all of these people, and they're all going to get to see what everyone else got. So the 5 p.m. guys, the landowner generously pays them a denarius. The 3 p.m. guys, the landowner comes and generously pays them a denarius. The noon guys, the landowner generously pays them a denarius. The 9 a.m. guys, the landowner generously pays them the denarius. And I bet those 6 a.m. guys are thinking, wow, the 5 p.m. guys got a denarius. Whew, we could get up to 8 or 9. And the landowner generously, according to his word, pays the 6 a.m. guys a denarius. I want to ask you, how would you feel? How would you feel? How would you feel if you were Daryl Johnston and Emmett Smith is being inducted into the Football Hall of Fame? At the end of this sermon, y'all, I'm just going to give you a reason to stay with me here. At the end of this sermon, I'm going to show you a little clip of Emmett Smith being inducted into the Football Hall of Fame. And I want you to imagine how you would feel knowing what you had done. And the stadium is full. And for a few hours, all the focus is going to be on Emmett Smith. And for a few hours, everybody's going to be clapping for Emmett Smith. And Emmett Smith is going to give up and give a 25-minute speech to receive his Hall of Fame award. And you're sitting there in the stadium and your neck hurts. Let me put it this way. How do you feel when someone else gets credit for a job you have done? And I want to put it in the context of just a local church here. I want you to imagine that I have some plaques or awards here this morning. I want to ask you, how many people here do I have who've served in our children's ministry? Raise your hand if you've served in our church. A lot of people here. Thank you. I want to ask you, how would you feel if I said, hey, this morning I've got an award for our MVP Hall of Famer Children's Ministry Volunteer for 2020-2021, and her name is Jan, and Jan has been serving just 6 months, but she was so awesome. How would you feel if you'd been serving 20 years dealing with snotty noses and dirty diapers? Or how many small group leaders do I have here this morning? Raise your hand if you've been a small group leader any time or one now. Raise your hand high. Let me see a lot of them. How would you feel if I said, today I've got an award for our MVP Hall of Famer small group leader, Kathy? She has been so amazing in 2020-21. And you're like, what are you saying, Tomba? Do you know how difficult my group was during COVID? You know what it was like getting them to Zoom? Our small group leaders are laughing because they are worn out, okay? Or how would you feel if I said, I won't ask for any hands here. We got Robert, and I just want to give him the MVP plaque for giving. And some of you would say, wait a minute, you talked about money last week, and you said nobody knows, you don't know what people give, okay? But how would you feel? I want to show you how the laborers respond in verse 11. It says, the 6 a.m. guys, when they got their denarius, as promised, it says, they grumbled at the landowner. And you know what I love about the word grumble? It's one of those words that sounds like, you know, what it means, right? And even in the Greek, it's one of those kind of words that sounds like what it means. And it says, they said, these last men, watch what they say. These last men have worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden and the scorching heat of the day. They are grumbling, they are unhappy, and what is their problem? You have made them equal to us. And he set them up, right? They get to see, so they start doing this thing, comparing, right? I want to ask you, I really want you all to try to answer this. I want you to just think about comparison for a moment. What does comparison do to our soul, our heart? What does it do? What's that? Comparison creates despair. Thank you, Polly. Anybody else? It is the thief of joy. And somebody else was saying that. Yeah. Creates despair. It's the thief of joy. It kills contentment, right? And often we are fine with what we have until we see what someone else is getting. And if you work in HR, you know it, right? If you know what everybody else is getting paid, you know this thing. I want to read a quote that's 70 years old. I've read it many times. We must picture hell as a state where everyone is perpetually concerned about his own dignity and advancement, where everyone has a grievance, and where everyone lives with the deadly serious passions of envy, self-importance, and resentment. And I mentioned it was written 70 years ago. Welcome to 2021, amen. Daryl Johnston has 3 Super Bowl rings because he was able to say, I serve Emmett Smith and it is my pleasure. I couldn't imagine doing it for someone else. Because he was able to answer those questions, will I serve? No matter how the team asked me to serve, will I serve? No matter how much applause I get. I want you to seriously to try to imagine if a guy like Daryl Johnston had allowed that comparison thing to kill the joy, to kill the contentment, to such a point that when he realized he was going to average about 1.5 carries a game over the course of his career, he said, I'm bailing out. I wonder if Emmitt Smith would have been the leading rusher at some point. I wonder if the Cowboys would have gotten 3 Super Bowl rings. In verse 15, Jesus looks and says, or the landowner looks and says, or is your eye envious because I am generous? Is your eye envious? You know, in the Greek, it's this, is your eye evil? It was an idiom for jealousy. We say things like the green-eyed monster, right? Verse 13, it says that the landowner said, friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius? Take what is yours and go, but I wish to give to this last man the same as you. Is it not lawful for me to do what I wish with what is my own? I want to say something about the God we serve. What is he like? The God we serve is good. He gives. The God we serve is generous. If I wish to give to the last the same as you. The God we serve is just. Is it not lawful for me? And the God we serve is the owner of all to do what I wish with what is my own. Your happiness today, my happiness today, my contentment is directly related to my ability to trust God. My contentment today is directly related to my ability to trust God. My contentment in saying, I'm going to be a part of the greatest team on earth, even though at times it doesn't feel like the greatest team. And I'm going to figure out how I'm going to serve and be a part of his kingdom business. My ability to do that and my contentment in that is directly related to my ability to trust God. It's not simply a case of how people treat you. Will I serve however God calls me to serve? Will I serve God no matter what applause I receive from others? So I will only answer yes to those questions if I am able to trust God as my generous rewarder. Here's the point of the parable. Trust God as your generous rewarder. In an economy where he says the first will be last and the last will be first. It's really confusing for us. I want you to look at verse 17. You know, you want to say, if you're one of those disciples, they got it. And they said, yes, Jesus, we're going to do whatever you want us to do. And Jesus is going to make sure we understand the level of serving he talks about. It says in verse 17 that Jesus was about to go up to Jerusalem. And he took the 12 disciples aside by themselves. They have a huddle, okay? They got 12 men in the huddle. And on the way, he said to them, verse 18, behold, we're going to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man, remember, that's talking about Jesus' authority and his kingship, the Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death, and will hand him over to the Gentiles to mock, scourge, and crucify him, and on the third day he will be raised up. Guys, if you want to compare, if you want to compare how well you're serving, not just in the church, we could take it in any area, right? Your work, your marriage. We could put this with your friends. We could take this anywhere. Jesus says, you compare it to this. The king is going to serve in, we'll say, the most unappreciated way possible. He's going to get a cross. And the king is going to serve in the most misunderstood way possible. He's going to get a cross. And the king is going to serve in the most horrific way possible. He's going to get a cross. And we so want the disciples to say what? Oh, Jesus, we got it now. And we want us to say that. And some of us are saying, yeah, I've got it now, until real life hits, right? Watch what happens here, verse 20. The mother of the sons of Zebedee, I love this, Mama Zebedee steps in. And she comes to Jesus with her sons, bowing down and making a request of him. And he said to her, boy, I wish I could have seen the look on Jesus's face. What do you wish, my dear lady? She said to him, command that in your kingdom, these two sons of mine may sit one on your right and one on your left. Jesus, these boys, put them in the hall of fame. And Jesus answered, and it looks like they're part of this. And he says, y'all don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink? Hey, before you raise your hand saying, I'm willing to serve, no matter how God calls me to serve, and before you raise your hand and say, I'm going to serve no matter how much applause I get. You know, Jesus right there says to those guys, he said, are you willing to serve me in maybe the most misunderstood way possible? Are you willing to serve me when you're not appreciated? Are you willing to serve me when it's painful and horrific? You know, I hadn't planned to ask people to raise their hands when they've served as small group leaders or in our children's ministry. And I know there's so many other ways people serve here, and you didn't even get to raise your hand. And I want you to understand that even in the context of a local church, so often it does and will go unnoticed. Watch what happens here. Jesus says in verse 23, my cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right hand and on my left, this is not mine to give, but is for those to whom it has been prepared by my Father. So you're going to need to do this. Trust God as your generous rewarder. And right now we want to say, and we think the disciples got it, that somehow the disciples heard, oh yeah, being loyal to Jesus, that's been our key word of the year. Being loyal to Jesus means serving. And the New Testament, when it actually talks about serving Jesus, it uses terminology like this, you're going to suffer. Are you able to drink the cup I drink, says Jesus. That phrase there is about experiencing the wrath of God. In whatever area of life, are you able to do that? That somehow, church, in the New Testament, the blessing of suffering because of your loyalty brings in the gift of intimacy with Jesus. See, we all say, I want to have intimacy with Jesus. Watch how the disciples respond here. Verse 24, and hearing this, the 10 became indignant with the two brothers. You see it? They're all lined up, right? Mama Zebedee comes, the two brothers are there, all the other disciples are watching this. The 6 a.m. workers, they're mad. The disciples, they're mad, they are indignant. They're furious. And somehow, what happened with those laborers, what happened with those disciples is all the pride and competition and comparison is stirred up in their hearts. And y'all, I wish we could just really think for a moment here. I was going to read something, and it's really strong, but I don't want to read it because I want to give you a moment to try to biopsy what's happening in our culture right now with you and me. In a culture of Instagram and comparison and Facebook and all of this. In a culture where we're saying this person has this and this person doesn't have this. And it's feeding on your comparison and your pride, because here's the thing, church, you know, it's at that point of comparison that all this stuff gets exposed. And you know, pride works this way. It's not simply, I think I'm good looking or I have a lot of money or I did a lot of great service. It works this way. When it gets in comparison, I really feel good about my life and myself when I am better looking than you. When I have more than you. When I get appreciation and I get more of it than you. Do you see what our whole culture is doing to us right now? And church, I believe that right now something that could possibly stop the world and cause it to look is that there's a group of people who are so loyal to Jesus that they're asking this question, that we're asking this question, how can I go out and serve? You know, I was talking to somebody on the phone this morning about this, and I said, this isn't part of my sermon, but I'm going to make this part of my sermon this morning. You know, there's a lot of talk about freedom right now from both sides of the political aisle. A lot of talk about freedom. I want to tell you that when Jesus talks about freedom, the Christianity, when it shapes freedom in all your New Testament books, you know what the shape is? The shape is this. It is freedom that we take a hold of, and it says it's not freedom to do what I want whenever I want. It's freedom, the Bible says, to serve. The freedom to use whatever I have to, in love, serve a world. And I believe this idea of freedom in love to serve a world is what Jesus, these are the guys who are going to take and start the church, that they got to get this. And so when they're indignant, again, Jesus calls a huddle, verse 25, and he says, he's already said this before, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. He said, this is how the world works. Everybody's trying to be great. Everybody's trying to get on top of everyone else to have a little more. That's pride. And he says in verse 26, it's not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. There it is again. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man, the great one himself, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many, unappreciated, misunderstood, horrific death. And so the question here this morning is this. Church, will I serve however God calls me to serve? And will I serve God no matter what applause I receive from others? We will only do that according to our ability to trust God as our generous rewarder. So I want to show you here in just a second this video of Emmett Smith in his Hall of Fame speech. And I'll tell you, it's really kind of fascinating to watch because he talks to Michael Irvin about his work ethic and how it changed him. He talks to Troy Aikman about his leadership and how he changed him. And it was just for a second, but then he addresses Daryl Johnston. Now, y'all know Daryl Johnston's nickname is? So there's, when you first start the video, it sounds like they're booing, they're just saying the moose, okay? Let's watch this. Listen carefully to Emmett's words.
Daryl Johnston, where are you? Would you please stand? Daryl, you mean the world to me. Not just because we share the same backfield, but because you sacrificed so much for me. People don't understand what it took to be a fullback in our system. The sacrifices you made, not simply with your body, but your whole spirit. You took care of me as though you were taking care of your little brother. Without you, without you, I know today would not have been possible. I love you, Daryl, from the bottom of my heart.
That's some good stuff, y'all. I want to invite everybody to stand as we prepare for our closing song. And to those of you who have been loyal to the King, those of you who have said to Jesus, "You are the King of my heart, and I'm going to trust God is my generous rewarder," I want you to know that I have incredible hope in these days for the church because of this. And I can imagine a day when it's not going to be a friend or a pastor or a teammate or a church that acknowledges you, but it's going to be Jesus himself. All the ways people have served, all the giving that has been done in secret in so many ways. I can imagine a day when Jesus says words like, "Please stand," and he calls out your name. And I can imagine him saying something like this, "You mean the world to me." We don't doubt that, do we? He died on a cross for you. I can imagine him saying, "The world's greatest team has done great things because of you." And although there no one would have ever understood how you sacrificed because of this system where the first will be last and the last will be first, I want you to know, and I love you. I love you.